Hello, everyone. This is Fess of the Webcast Beacon Network here with a basic announcement saying that the Webcomic Beacon and the Webcomic Beacon Newscast are going to be on the same feed. Apparently, the Webcomic Beacon Newscast's feed was not working, so some people thought we weren't doing them anymore. So hopefully we can get them over and listen to the Webcomic Beacon newscast, Webcomic Beacon feed. For those who have already had the Webcomic Beacon feed, yep, this is a newscast episode, and we're going to see how this works. So if you go to webcastbeacon.com/shows, pick up the Webcomic Beacon feed, and you will get the Webcomic Beacon and the Webcomic Beacon newscast. Otherwise, you can grab the master feed, which you'll be able to get all of our new programming. And there is, let's see here, we have some network news I want to mention real quick because I didn't integrate this into this week's episode. We are having a webcomic blind date. For those that have heard the Xavier Xerxes episode of the Webcomic Beacon, who originally created the webcomic blind date, we are going to be attempting that again, where we're going to pair up an artist and a writer together, basically as a blind date, to create a Valentine's Day comic, basically. For more information, you can email webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. And there's a brand new giveaway. There was the 4th anniversary giveaway that was done in December. In spring 2012, there is another comic book giveaway. In this particular giveaway, there is the complete set of Family Bones, which you can find more at familybones.kingtractorpress.com, as well as the Boobles audio CD. It's a Beatles parody CD for breast cancer research. All their sales goes to breast cancer research, and I'm basically giving their first bundle, which includes the first CD, as a prize as well. So you can check that out at webcastbeacon.com/giveaway. Do you also want to mention, sorry for delaying to the show, but I do want to mention that Comic Creators for Freedom at Comic Creators for Freedom right now is starting their annual donations drive for fighting against human trafficking. That runs from January 9th through 20th. And January 11th is Human Trafficking Awareness Day. And I would like to mention that all of their donations go to Love 146 and Grace Haven. These are two organizations that deal with fighting human trafficking and also helping victims. You can find out more information at Comic Creators for Freedom. Donate today and get this year's... basically, it's a collaborative desktop wallpaper. It's an epic snowball fight, so you can see a ton of characters involved in this having a great snowball fight. And, of course, your donations go to help fight against human trafficking. You can... the first five people that that I hear about that forward me their $100 donation... any amount you can donate. But if you donate $100, the first five people that forward their PayPal receipt for their donation to Comic Creators Alliance, they will get free advertising spots on the Webcomic Beacon newscast. So that's just an extra incentive that I am giving out. Go ahead and to Comic Creators for Freedom, donate and help great cause. Without further ado, I would like to introduce this week's Webcomic Beacon newscast. I do apologize for the audio quality of this episode. We are working right now, actually, to figure out a way to best record future newscasts. In the meantime, I do apologize, but this is an extra special episode, as you'll hear in a moment, and this is the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
It is Sunday, January 7th, 2012, and this is episode 49 of the Webcomic Beacon newscast with, from alexisguide.net, Alex Heberling.
Happy New Year!
Eric Dramos Kimball from BladeBunny.com.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
And from Keenspot's newest edition, Hero by Night, DJ Kaufman.
I have nothing witty to say.
And from 910 Comics, that's 910cmx.com, I'm Thomas Revor. And let's go ahead and start off with the return of Hero by Night. From Keenspot, DJ Kaufman has taken back control of the comic rights to Hero by Night from Platinum Studios and will be producing all new issues in 2012. DJ has brought Hero by Night exclusively to Keenspot, removing it from its former home on Drunk Duck. And let's go ahead and go into that, because there was a lot of drama involved with Hero by Night back in the day when Platinum Studios, a.k.a. Drunk Duck, a.k.a. a lot of other things, held a contest to for webcomics, and the winner was going to get a publishing contract, going to get published comics, going to get Drunk Duck, going to get the whole schmeal. And that kind of didn't quite work out the way as intended. And if I remember correctly, a lot of it involved not just the failure of publishing, which I think Hero by Night lasted, what, 3 issues in print?
Oh, no, there were 7.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it was a miniseries. But
we only saw 3 locally here.
Yeah, that was the original. That was, like, the
on-series. But they also claimed they owned all the rights as part of the contest to Hero by Night, and... Well, DJ, if you can, tell us a little bit more about what happened with Platinum.
So a little bit of the history, which is kind of, I know it's all over the place, but actually what the comic book challenge wasn't geared towards webcomic creators. It was just create a comic book, anybody, you know? So it was sort of like they were trying to be like an American Idol type of thing online for comic book creators.
Kind of like what Zuda did back with from DC. Where they held the contest and
yeah, but
they predated Zuda.
First.
Yeah, this is
they came up with this. It was very popular, and Zuda said, "Hey, we can steal that."
Right. So the timeline goes. You know, actually, the timeline's kind of funny, and you know, I saw this article online through the comic book news, not through the webcomic news, because there was such a dichotomy split between webcomic news, because everybody in comic book land considered everybody in webcomics like, you know, amateur hour, you know, like
the redheaded stepchild up locked up in the attic.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that attitude has disappeared. You know, now there's
live in such a free society. It's all love and rainbows.
So actually the contest was geared towards comic book creators or aspiring comic book, whoever, just anybody. So you know, me doing many webcomics at the time, I kind of joked with my wife and said, "You know what? I think I'm gonna, you know, submit Hero by Night to this, because it was a thing I had on the shelf that I wanted to do as a webcomic." So I said, you know, I just jokingly said, "Hey, I'm going to send this in, and I might have to go to San Diego in July." And I didn't think I would actually, you know, get picked. But so I just sent it in. But the minute I sent it in, that's when the brouhaha of stuff came up. You know, like. I don't exactly remember, but of course, back in the day, it was, you know, Joey Manley and Scott Kurtz, and they had an interview with Scott Rosenberg about their past, and I mean, I didn't know any of the stuff. I didn't know the history of Platinum or anything like that, or, you know, all that drama. But, no, basically, that's what it was, and Drunk Duff, it existed at the time, but Platinum hadn't bought them yet. So the actual flow of how things went was I won the contest after going out there, and again, there was maybe two other webcomic people in that whole top 50. I mean, most of them were people trying to break into the comic book industry. And but that's when I was, after I won it, I was told that, "Hey, we bought this thing called Drunk Duck." And I mean, I knew what Drunk Duck was. Mm-hmm. And they were like, "We want to host Hero by Night there." And I thought, cool, this sounds all right. Because the plan sort of was that they were going to actually start backing a lot of creators on Drunk Duck, you know, so that they could then make deals with them to represent their content for film and TV stuff. So, I mean, it sounded like, wow, this is kind of a cool thing. So But actually, we were in print in 2006 with the miniseries, and we did 4 issues, and everybody liked it so much, and people were writing letters to Platinum saying, "Hey, we want this to be an ongoing series." That we actually went into an ongoing series and launched that, and then that only went 3 issues, and then the money kind of dried up, and that kind of deals with problems with the colorists getting paid, or when people are relying on money to get paid, things kind of fall apart.
Yeah, it's strange how that works.
Yeah, right. So back then I kind of flipped out a little bit because I was, there were many things being said that weren't truthful, and I guess the safest way to say that would be that, I didn't say a lot of things I regret, but I shouldn't have probably, put it all out there like I did, because it just kind of created drama, friction that didn't need to be done. But way back then, I put a deal on the table that someone who's no longer with that company didn't like. Which I don't even want to mention his name, but he was a jerk. That's all I'll say. And everybody that knows who it is. But the guy just didn't like me after I actually opened my mouth and said that they were out of money, So he just kiboshed the whole deal. And that deal's been with them forever, but it's just kind of, with all the other stuff that they've got going on, it sat somewhere. So the real reason it came back was because someone new was working there, and Sean De Pascal, who's a letterer from Comic Book Industry Land that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And he had reached out to me today and said, what's the deal? And I said, well, since you're the guy now, haven't you seen the deal that I sent? Maybe they should think about this, because it was good for everybody. I thought it brings Hero by Night back to the fans and lets me control basically all of the comic side of things. Like, they can't go and make multiple other comics. But there's a reason that there hasn't been any more comics. One, they were out of funds. And two, they couldn't really go on and do the comic side without
me. Right.
But now I said, it kind of works for everybody. Let me control the comic side of things, and you guys can still do your Hollywood stuff, which I don't really care about. because for me, it's always been about Hero by Night was supposed to be a webcomic, and it was going to be that before it was going to be in the... I've skipped the comic book industry on purpose for many years, basically that's how it came back. They finally sat down. And I think Scott Rosenberg thought that I was really mad at him or really angry at him personally. And I kind of was like, no, I don't really take any of this stuff personally. It's kind of business. And we kind of hashed things out, and everybody liked the idea now that someone actually read it. And it got onto the right desk, and they kind of agreed to everything that I wanted. So, yeah, it's a good deal.
Well, I
find it really interesting that the solution to the story, the end of this, is you said, well, no, I don't hold any grudges. It's business, and we're just going to do what's best for business. I think that's often a rare quality in at least the webcomic field.
And for me, it kind of, I don't think this would have happened if the same people were there, because they were holding, we can't deal with DJ because he might open his mouth again or say something. So those kind of the shadier dudes are kind of gone. They're actually gone. Mm. The only person that's left in Platinum these days is the actual owner, which, day-to-day operations are all new people. So, it's been way different, like night and day. I'm not gonna get back on the bandwagon where I'm running around the internet cheerleading Platinum, because I think that was a big mistake. But I was excited. Give me a break. Here I was, they were treating me good, flying me everywhere. That was a great time. I was a little overzealous, but these days I gotta say it's night and day. It took forever to get the old Platinum to put something together and some, you know, just they were so busy with other things. And you know, this week there were other deals going on. It was like, wow, there's actually things happening.
Yeah, it does sound a lot like, I mean, getting rid of some of the Deadwood, like Wawa and Drunk Duck, sounds like Platinum really is cleaning up their act.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. My theory has always been that there was a lot of people hanging around hoping that Cowboys and Aliens would be their $1 million, like, somehow that since they were staff, they would somehow be millionaires because Cowboys and Aliens came out. But, I mean, just because you work for Kraft Macaroni and Cheese and they come out with microwave singles does not mean that you're going to be a millionaire because you're the macaroni in the containers. You know what I mean?
And I think the comparison between Cowboys and Aliens and Kraft Macaroni and microwave cheese singles is a very apt comparison.
But, I mean, this is actually kind of interesting. Was Hero by Night helped by the simple fact that Cowboys and Aliens tanked so badly? I mean, did that help motivate and move Platinum along and start to get things rolling for you? Is that sort of how?
Well, I mean, it seems to me that the only way that it helped, which I don't even know, I don't know that it tanked. I mean, obviously they're very smart. Somebody there made money somewhere, and they, you know, Hollywood is such a strange place, you know, like they figure out ways to do stuff internationally and all these other things you wouldn't think of behind the scenes, and they don't put out press releases about it, and you're like, okay, so yeah, I mean, it's so confusing. Like, you hear that they're in debt, but then they've got money, and it's like,
yeah,
okay, so if a company that was in debt, why would there be an investor? I don't know. It's just
all right, so tank is the wrong word, yeah, but the fact that Cowboys and Aliens wasn't the $1 million success they were expecting.
I think the only way that that helped me was that the people that were hanging around that I had problems with were gone. I mean, that's kind of, you know, I think the people that were just there to milk off of the owner or milk that pony, you know.
The sycophants.
Yeah, so. And those are the people that really kind of held things up for me if I'd send things in or, you know, reach out, they'd be like, no, you know, we're not going to deal with you anymore. meanwhile, they would have people, I know they would have people emailing them saying, hey, when's Hero by Night coming back? I would get emails once or twice a week, honestly, for, hey, are you ever going to do this again? And honestly, I thought I had kind of put it behind me a little bit. Like, I thought, okay, I'm going to just go forward. And if something happens, great. Like, if they sell a movie down the line or something, you know, whoop-de-doo. But I never really thought that I would be getting to do the actual stories again. So that's what's most important to me right now.
Well, on behalf of everybody out there, we're glad to see Hero by Night back and the other projects that you've got out there, which just happened to be...
You're supposed to tell us.
Yes.
I'm supposed to tell you? Oh, so
yeah.
My cat needed it out of the office because he.
Okay, we're kind of losing you there, DJ.
I'm here.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, the other projects you're involved in right now.
Yeah, I'm still doing work for the ukulele company through my Bigfoot and Tiki comic strip through Lanikai Ukulele. So that's kind of cool. Like, it's just been sort of a goofy, wacky little comic, BigfootandTiki.com. And I just finished up a graphic novel for SmarterComics.com about the law of attraction, which is like the secret-y stuff, you know, like occult, cool thing. So.
Sounds terrific. So everybody make sure to stop by the sites and your homepage at djkaufman.com, I believe.
Yeah.
And see what's going on with DJ. Meanwhile, let's go ahead and look at some of our other stories. Talking about unprofessionalism, there's a company out there called Ocean Marketing that makes a video game controller. Rather sophisticated one that I'm seeing at that... had a little bit of a delay in the shipments. And when one of their purchasers asked them about it, things got kind of heated. Now, what does this have to do with webcomics? Well, the situation was bad enough until Mike Kralik, Gabe, from Penny Arcade, stepped in. And after seeing everything that's going on with that, that was gasoline on the fire, shall we say. And things just went downhill from there. There were a lot of claims made from Ocean Marketing, including that they knew and had a booth over at PAX, which Mike knew nothing about. But it's a great example of anything that's on the internet will probably become public somewhere down the line.
Anything you say can and will be used against you.
And the entire thing went public on a post over on Penny Arcade itself. All the mails, both every direction coming from it.
Oh.
Yeah.
My favorite one out of all the emails that got sent around was the one that this guy, Cristoforo, which is his last name.
Yeah.
Paul Cristoforo. After Gabe, drug him through the coals on PennyArcade.com. He got an email later saying, "Gabe, you have the power. Make it stop." Begging for mercy.
There's two things you don't do. You don't kick Penny Arcade, and then what you really don't do is beg for mercy from Penny Arcade.
You can smell fear.
Yeah. it is a great example of some of the power of the new media. It is the instant, and I won't use the phrase gratification because there was nothing gratifying on any direction from this, but seeing the response from Ocean Marketing, there were chills that I saw running down my editor's spine. I mean, My 6-year-old nephew has better spelling and grammar than this. And this is supposedly a professional marketing guy who's writing this stuff.
Yeah. Like, it seemed like a dude from Craigslist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it.
How do you get it? Like, where's my stuff? Forget it, man. You ain't getting it.
But, I think that's pretty much all that can be said on that point. So going on next, Warren Ellis, longtime comic book and novel writer, lots of things, have had 5 predictions about the immediate future of comics. Or, as he says, non-predictions about comics in 2012, where he admits it's basically 5 things that are going to be self-evident in 2012 about comics. One of the things that I like is that he says that this should be the year where established comic creators go digital first. Yay, webcomics.
Yeah.
But there is a but to that.
There is a but to that.
A big old but.
And that is, he also said that should have happened last year. And we are, again, it's the old media dragging and kicking into the new media. And we are going to be seeing independent comics creating a roll-your-own digital service, allowing them to upload their stuff into storefront apps. In a way, we already see that with iTunes and the Kindle, but...
Yeah. You know what's sad about that? I mean, is that some of the creators I've spoken with that are on Comixology and a couple of the other apps aren't really making money. You know, like, it's just another middleman.
Yes.
Sad. And iTunes is just another middleman. And, like, these guys like comfort. Like, I like Warren Ellis, but it seems like they like comfort more than they like taking a risk. You know, I mean, someone like Scotty Young, you know, he put out his PDF version of his comic book last year and did really well, I heard. So...
Yeah, and Bill Holbrook over with Kevin and Kel has an app out as well.
These guys could all bail. These guys could all bail from their big companies like Marvel, DC. If Brian Bendis went online right now and started selling $1.99 PDFs of his work, he would just never have to work again. You know, I mean, he'd never have to work for Marvel again.
Yeah, I mean. I sort of understand what's going on here because it's not old media dragging its heels. It's individual employee saying, I like a steady paycheck. And this is one of the big problems with webcomics, is that you can point to individual people saying, look at them, they made $1 million. Look at them, they made $1 million. But there is no consistent mechanism to say, if you do this, you will definitely make a paycheck in the next year. You know, I mean, you can say there are some famous people who, if they bailed, they'd immediately, you know, Brian Bendis immediately get money. But there are also lesser known people at Marvel who could bail, have an idea, put it up online, and it just goes nowhere. And then they don't get any money whatsoever. And this is sort of the problem of the independent and contractor field. And contractor life's kind of are really hard. Because you never know if you're going to make money, and you never know what is happening in the next month. And people like consistency.
Well, and that's been the thing with comic books all along. I mean, with companies that had a terrific product like Comic-Co and Fantagraphics, there's no guarantee that a success, having a better product means you're going to be successful. I mean, there are a lot of times where the talent lists and the hacks are the ones that are making the money.
Yeah.
And speaking about which, one of the last paragraphs in Ellis's story here states that for those who care about the big commercial comics companies, DC will continue to cede market share to Marvel during 2012 until they launch another round of issue number ones in September. Yeah. At which point, sadly, I think we'll see the first signs of exits and exit strategies from DC staff. The only thing I say about that is, told you so.
Yeah. DJ, you sort of have feet in both worlds. I mean, do you see the sort of reluctance of the going at your own strategy?
Well, yeah, because they're just not practiced in it. But I've seen enough where you go to a show. It's been over the years. First, you'd go to a show, and they would hear how much you made, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't believe you. They would be like, that's impossible. But now you go to a show and they hear how much you made and they want to know how you did it. And then I think that's the reluctance is. They go, well, wait, I got to do all of that. I got to do the marketing. Yeah. I got to do, like, I just want to sit and write a script. I mean, that's great.
That's
good for you, because you better have that going on whenever those companies go belly up, because sooner or later, I think that's what's coming down.
Like, absolutely right. I mean, people forget that the webcomics business still is a business. I mean, it's not just enough to go through and write and draw a comic. You have, if you're going to become successful, you have to have the whole marketing plan. You have to have the mechanisms behind the scenes to be a successful business, not just a webcomic.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I look at, like, down the road is, look, why did Marvel sell to Disney? If Marvel was had their own film company and they were making all that money in film, and they sold their stuff to Disney, it's pretty simple that sooner or later Disney's not going to make money off of them, and they're going to cut them loose, and they'll sit like the Muppets did for years, and then there'll be guess what, Spider-Man and the Hulk are back, you know, 10 years from now. I think that's what's going to happen is, sooner or later, they're going to cut that loose, and the comic industry is going to be hurting. Because right now, the only thing keeping the comic book industry alive is people are afraid to tick off retailers. And when they realize, hey, there's not that many retailers. And when someone at Disney kind of looked over the books and goes, wait, why are we doing this? We're doing this for a handful of stores that are making money. They're going to bail. I mean, that simple.
Yeah, the retailer comic book dynamic is really strange. But I agree on that. It's a strange situation, and we've had a lot of stories here about how, you know, anytime there's been a move to digital, the retailers have been lashing back.
And let's segue with that, because one of our other stories coming up, which we'll get to now, talks about how Marvel is saying if you'll buy one of their 99-cent digital comics, you'll receive a $5 coupon for the print comic at one of your local Diamond Distributor stores. and they had to release a FAQ talking about everything that's going on with that. It does seem like it is a major prop up to the brick and mortar stores of traditional comic book stores.
Yeah, I'm not an MBA, but if you give your customers $5 for every $1 they spend, I don't think that's a sustainable business model.
Yeah, I think it's just like they're selling dinosaur food. You know, that up school do, hey, dinosaur food. Don't feed it to your cats and dogs, but feed it to your dinosaurs.
And speaking about dinosaurs, let's go ahead and deal with our own dinosaur. And no, it's not me. And that is, let's go ahead and take our first break so we can get some of that advertising revenue in.
The Geek Life Podcast is, get this, a discussion of all things geek. Technology, movies, television, books, comics, games, nothing is off limits.
Renew!
Sigh.
Renew!
What's this red blinking light?
I had that removed twice. Did you know that the MPAA film rating system began on November 1st?
No wonder we get all moody in the winter.
I know. You know, I wasn't going to say that.
Would you like some syrup?
Join Mike, Paul, Richard, and Melissa at The Geek Life Podcast at thegeeklife.tv.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to the Webcomics Beacon Newscast. I'm Thomas DeVore with my co-hosts Alex Heberling and Eric Kimball, and our special guest, DJ Coffin from Hero by Night. As we go back in the story, we've got one about 13 fantastic female comic creators of 2011. Now, of course, it's great to hear that women are involved in comics that are not Kate Beaton. Isn't that right, Eric?
Yes, it is.
But it does have a very interesting list of some of the people, and not the usual names that you'll see. There's not as popular, but they'll probably get there. Names like Varys Brosgol, with Anya's Ghost, that actually got a comment on that from Neil Gaiman listed on the cover. Kelly Sue DeConnick, who's done some work with Supergirl, and so many others, both in independent and in the major publishers.
Yay, ladies.
Now, of course, one of the people that they list is Spike, Charlie Troutman, from Templar, Arizona. Let's hear it for the webcomics.
Hey. Is Becky Cloonan or Meredith Grant in that list?
Meredith is.
Unfortunately, yep. No. Wait, Meredith is?
Yeah, Meredith McLaren of Hinges.
Oh,
I meant Meredith Grant of Octopus Prime.
Yeah.
She's really good cartoonist.
Nope, and they do have a list of people from 2010. You know, they start off by saying, you know, please don't fill up comments with women you think are missing. Make sure to check the 2010 list, which includes Kate Beaton and so many others of names that are both familiar and not so familiar.
Well, Katie Cooper's on the 2010 list.
But it does seem, I mean, I applaud them for going through and actually listing some of the webcomic women out there instead of just staying with the traditional media. Next up, we are seeing a lot of business. We talked about Kickstarter the last time that we were together. And we're seeing a lot of success from people raising money over on Kickstarter. They have a story over on Comics Alliance talking about the most successful Kickstarter comics. with people making 100 to 700% of their goal. And this is getting into hundreds or thousands, but tens of thousands of dollars being raised. The highest amount that I'm seeing being, well, the Transmetropolitan Art Book, which raised over $45,000.
No, Tom, look way, way, way up on the top of that graph.
Oh, I take that back, yes. Womanthology, which is an independent thing, who has made almost $110,000, which is about 400% of their goal. Good heavens.
And blowing all the other Kickstarter things out of the water. Womanthology just decimated Kickstarter last year.
What do they do with all the money?
They say they're printing books.
Yes. And it's great to see things like this. It's the non-traditional route to where people can, if you've got a good product, people will be putting money forth towards it rather than just having to beg and borrow from the standard investors.
DJ, what's your opinion on Kickstarter, by the way?
Oh, well, you know, I always see the... I always see the, you know, oh, this person made so much money on Kickstarter, and then like five other independent people go, oh man, I'm going to do Kickstarter. And I recently had a business conversation with another publisher that was like, hey, why don't we try Kickstarter? And I see that they all fail. So, I mean, for every person that makes it, makes 700%, there's probably 100 that don't. I mean, Dan Taylor, one of my good friends, does, he did Hero Happy Hour, and, he just had a really good one up recently called like Renfield and Igor or something. And it was really awesome. Like it was a good concept, nice pitch. And it didn't make its goal of like $3,000. I couldn't believe it. You know, I mean, so I mean, there's a lot of projects out there. It's just such a crapshoot, you know. But I think the good thing about it is when I hear that there are people willing to donate like $100. That means to me that there's still people out there, random people. They're not all just comic book fans that are like willing to spend $100 to help support a random creator on the internet, you know? So,
yeah. I mean, the thing about Kickstarter I've often seen is that you really have to have a good personal story. You know, it's not so much, oh, this is a great idea. It's, I am the person you want to give money to. I think one of the reasons Womanthology did so well was it was marketed as this is women getting into comics. And the Kickstarter came out at the same time there was that big blow up with DC's 52 dropping all the women. Yeah. And so it was successful. Not so much because of because it was a great idea, but because of the personal narrative behind it.
Yeah, I think it's more like instead of a business model, I think it's more of like a grant, like like Zurich grant. I mean, you're a comic creator and you're applying for a grant, so put your best, you know, put your best pitch out there and hope that, but have no doubt that it's a grant. You know what I mean?
And I have seen a lot of it where they are giving incentives for people who donate. You know, like you're the first one who'll get this product, or you'll get some of these special things that we've got on the sides, which has been a traditional webcomic incentive for donations as well. And that's really what this is. It's more of a conglomeration of the donation process, which don't use that phrase with PayPal, but that's a completely different story we've already covered.
And, you know, for marketing, it might actually be good to post... to post projects and actually fail based on your webcomic. Like, who cares if it doesn't make the funding as long as you have links to your webcomic, you know, and you get 100 people that are interested in your stuff. Use Kickstarter as the marketing ploy, you know.
Well, and if you make 50% of your goal, that's still 50% of more than you had.
Hey, search for Hero by Night on Kickstarter tomorrow.
Good thing they're not invited.
Yeah, it's not invite only.
But on a similar story over on Amazon with the Kindle, they have released some of their sales of digital books from Christmas of 2011, And, of course, some of the books on there, some of the comic books on there should be expected. You know, Batman, The Complete Hush, Watchmen, The Long Halloween, Superman Earth 1. But at the top of the list is How to Be a Supervillain, written by a 14-year-old, written and drawn by a 14-year-old girl. That's a light and fun story of someone who was actually coming from the manga side of comics rather than the traditional comic book style.
Actually, I must interject a correction here.
Okay.
I don't think the person who wrote this article did much research, because you could go to her personal website and find out this stuff, but she doesn't actually draw books, but she writes them. They're drawn by other people.
Well, at least it's still being written. I haven't seen something like this since, what was that extremely bad movie, Aragon, which was a book written by a young person. But we are seeing that a lot of, again, non-traditional people, non-traditional media, and they're charging, I believe, 99 cents for this, as opposed to the $2, $3, $10, $20 that they're charging for some of the other stuff. And it's wiping the floor in sales over the big media. I mean, it was number 623 out of sales overall, with the next one being X Heroes, selling for $3 at 1,817.
Yeah, and I mean, there's two things again. Yet again, it's a good personal story that gets people's interest, you know, written by a 14-year-old girl. And the second thing is the price, because we've talked about this a lot. The price of $4 for a 25-page digital download is so dumb, and just not sustainable in a digital media. When you can pay a dollar for a song, you can pay a dollar for a video game. You can't compete by keeping the comic book shop prices. And I mean, I think that's the other thing, is just killing the major publishers.
Yeah, I would add, everybody should probably Google A Newbie's Guide to Publishing. It's a blog by Joe Conrath, who's an independent ebook author. He has so much information on that site about pricing and different things that he's done. Like, his latest article says about how he just made $50,000 in December off of his independent novels through Amazon. But his main takeaway is that, you know, of course, there's so many people with these new devices. Anything 99 cents, they scoop up because it's so cheap. Or free. They get the free ones. But he has actually found that for novels, the higher price you go, the better reviews you get. Because people are just that way. Like, if someone spends money on something, they think, this must be good, and they convince themselves that it's good, because they don't want to feel like, I spent $12 on this, and I wasted my money, you know. Unless it's totally terrible, even if you're an independent author with no name, you know, pricing your ebooks at $4.99, again, that's an ebook, that's a novel. But I agree with Eric about the pricing on comic books. That's a big mistake that a lot of comic book industry folks are making, is, oh, hey, there's an ebook over here for $4.99. I guess our comic book should be $4.99. You know, that's silly. So,
yeah. I mean, it goes just from business wise. I mean, there's a lot less overhead that you're dealing with in the e-media versus print media.
Actually, that's not necessarily true, because you are having, like we've mentioned before, a lot of middlemen.
It all depends. I mean, if you look at it, most e-readers, you'll have maybe one or two middlemen, and even one of those can be eliminated. An iTunes app with your comic books, if you have that developed in-house, as opposed to using someone else's where you're paying per issue, and that's a one-time development fee, and that gets lost. It's not the continual fee of the printing, of the storing, of all of this.
Well, a comic book, too. That's what stinks, is it's so much different. They're trying to compare Amazon sales to comic book sales, is that, you know, an author is just one person writing that ebook, but he's writing a 500-page ebook. You know, for a comic book, 22 pages might take a whole staff of people, you know? So there's that overhead there.
Everybody's got to get paid.
Yeah, everybody has to get paid. So, but still, it's not adding up in the consumer's mind. They're going to be like, why do I want to spend $3.99 on Spider-Man? You know, like.
Yeah. The unfortunate truth is there is a lot of overhead with comic books, and you can make the point that since comic books are a smaller market, they do have to have a higher margin on them. But those sorts of arguments don't fly when you're talking about a consumer who's trying to decide between Angry Birds and Spider-Man. You're simply going to say Angry Birds is 99 cents, Spider-Man's $4, and I can play Angry Birds for days, you know, and Spider-Man's one reading. So, you know, I'm sorry, your product's more. I would say, on a whole, your common game is probably has less overhead because it's developed by maybe one or a single developer versus a common comic, which may have a team on it. But the economics arguments very rarely work with customers.
Just wait until Angry Birds the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's
an Angry Birds webcomic, actually.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of webcomics out there. Next up, a story that just seems to keep cropping up every once in a while over on themarysue.com with a link over to a Tumblr, justsayins.tumblr.com, talking about the posing of female characters in comics. And I find this one actually interesting because the person who's writing it isn't just, you know, an artist saying the rest of this is pure gratification or things like this. It's actually someone who has a background in both martial arts and acrobatics, and looking at not the posing or the salaciousness of the art, but whether or not it's actually got any reality to it. Can these moves be made? And
the answer is yes, if you're both a martial artist and a contortionist, but you can't really do both at the same time.
Yes.
You can't fight and contort. It's just not very practical.
Well, I try not to draw that stuff. I mean, I don't think I have any sexy, like, lead women in Hero by Night, really. I don't know. I don't know. It kind of just turns me off, even though I could give a lot more clicks.
Hey, sex sells. Even unrealistic sex like Rob Liefeld, which we were talking about him during the break, so inside joke, folks. Well, actually, for those who have seen his art, maybe not so inside. Over on comicsbeat.com, there's an article from Todd Allen talking about a few thoughts and some of the problems within the digital comic industry. Yes, folks, there really are problems within the e-comic industry, talking about things such as setting the pricing, you know, with Apple originally setting the pricing on music at 99 cents to the distribution to so many others. I mean, it really is. It's a great look at some of the problems that you will be facing if you decide to go into the webcomics or ebook industry. Now, Eric, you brought the story up for us. What would you like to say about it?
I mean, yet again, it's sort of a good overview of what you have to think about. It talks a lot about pricing, a lot of things we've talked about here already. You know, just it gives you a good checklist going down of things that you should think about. Doesn't give you any real answers, but does sort of walk you through some things that you should think about. Format, color, size, pricing, all sorts of interesting things to think about. So it's if you're looking at self-publishing, it's a good thing to just go through to start to sort of get up to speed.
I'm looking through it right now, and I have to admit, just the section on pricing itself, it does talk a lot about some of the stuff that we've talked about as to the pricing, how much is being taken out by agencies and by Amazon or Apple versus how much of a profit do you want to make versus how much is it going to affect sales. So, I mean, we'll have a link to this over on our stories, over on the main page. But it is something that definitely takes a look at for those who want to get into the business.
Yeah, and I just want to add, for people that are thinking about selling their stuff direct, there's that Pulley app. You just look up Pulley app, and you can sell your books direct to fans, and you can set your PayPal to micropayment. It's like 5% plus 5 cents per transaction instead of the 30 cents or whatever. You can actually make more off of small money direct to your fans. You're probably going to do better than being on iTunes or Amazon if you're, you know.
So Scott McCloud may actually turn out to be right about micropayments in the long run.
Yeah, sure. I mean, as far as, you know, I don't think 30 cents, but as far as dollar sales, sure.
Next up, we are seeing that Axe wants your help writing the first comic created in real time. Axe is making a graphic novel called Axe Anarchy, and they are wanting your help by submitting ideas for the comic. It's a graphic novel about two experimental fragrances that are unleashed upon the world and the chaos that ensues.
A stupid idea.
I would normally say it is a stupid idea if it was not being done by Axe. Because they are very... Axe has two things in its favor, in that they are very savvy about the net and about viral marketing. They've done some of the best viral marketing campaigns I have ever seen. They really know what they're doing. And secondly, Axe is so incredibly misogynistic in the way they proceed about things.
Yeah.
I think it will get an audience simply because it will just... I mean, it will literally take comics back to the original power fantasy that they were from, and I think there is an audience out there for that that is desperate for these incredibly misogynistic works. So... I think,
but they're bad people.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a. I think it will be successful. I'm not saying it will be successful for good
because
reasons.
It's good. Yeah. See, my objection to this is that we don't have smell-o-vision yet. So how will we smell the comic, I guess?
Well, knowing the way that Axe is, we can pretty much tell that it's going to smell bad.
You swayed me with your argument. I think somebody should pitch the Old Spice Man for like Old Spice Guy Adventures or something. That'd be funnier.
I would draw that comic in a heartbeat.
Yeah. You'd get the females too. You'd get female audience. You'd be running around in a towel, you know, doing adventures. So
now I've seen things like this before. You know, basically the we've got two directions we can go. You vote on it. You know, whether or not Robin is going to live or die, things like that. But this is actually saying that this the plot will be shaped by suggestions on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Knowing the people that are following the viral marketing of X, how long do you think this will stay before it hits the NC-17 level?
No, I think they're going to try to keep it. I'm sure there will be NC-17 suggestions.
Yeah.
I, from a logistics standpoint, I don't see this working too well, and I don't see this being tried again anytime soon.
I think it's all BS. I think they probably won't listen to they'll have like fake people say, "Hey, how about doing this?" They'll keep it clean.
Oh yeah, I could see Axe having Shill saying, you know, some of the stuff that they want anyway.
Sock puppets.
And, that's an appropriate thing, considering that does kind of smell like moldy socks.
The funny thing is, a friend of mine sent me a link to a story about this on some other website. And you can kind of see in the video that's embedded in this story of the girls. Like, if you see the full image on, you know, somewhere else, you get, you know, two boobs and butt poses for the price of one, which is...
In other words, this thing will sell like hotcakes.
Yeah.
And sell like sexy hotcakes. Next over on that bastion of journalistic ethics, the Huffington Post, they have a story saying that digital comics are a neat upgrade, but not a replacement. talking about how ebooks and webcomics are not going to be replacing, in a complete 180 from what people have been saying for a long time, are not a replacement for the brick and mortar stores and the hard copy comics. And again, looking through the story, a lot of it is saying pretty much contrary to what we, some of the stuff we've discussed here, just even today, saying that it's not going to be replacing it, that the pricing isn't that bad a thing. This story is, it's more like a wish list of things to happen than an actual reporting of news or a look at the content.
And who wrote that? A comic book store owner? Or
yeah, I before the newscast, I collect the news, and before the newscast, I was talking about, you know, if someone sends me a press release, that does most of my job, and I put it into the news. So I read this, and I'm saying, some comic book store wrote a press release and sent it to the Huffington Post.
Yeah, this article just kind of reeks of that sort of, you know, stroking the metaphorical hard on about paper and how they like something they can hold. And
if it was all well and valid. You guys know who Hibbs is. I bet you he did it.
No, I mean, I will say that some of the stuff that we've talked about, I mean, old-time comic book fan here, I like the hard copy. I like holding something, and I like not having to plug it in to read it. But
I do too. And I think that, you know, I have this conversation all the time with comic collector fans of mine, and I like the idea of books. Like, I've got so many comic books just sitting in a corner, stacked up or something, and they're not treated right, you know? Like, I like the idea of making prints special again. Like, oh my God, I got this book, and you're going to put it on a shelf, and you're going to, like, shine a light on it or something, you know? Like, right now, books are just like, yeah, great, another book, you know?
Well, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I remember back in the 70s when DC and Marvel had ship-to-your-home subscriptions.
Yeah.
And that was a special thing, waiting for that issue to come out, getting it in the mail, although most of the time it was folded in half, and being able to read it without having to go out into the local drugstore or, much later, the comic book shop. And now we're getting that direct-to-you delivery with the e-comics. There isn't the stigma of going out to... my apologies to all the comic shop owners. I mean, I've worked in a number of comic shops, but there is a stigma to the comic shop, the Star Trek stigma of the geek central being there.
Yeah, and I think, like, back in the day, before comic book shops, before whoever thought the idea of, hey, let's have a direct market, there was the newsstand, and it was just publishers trying to get as close to the kids' bedrooms as possible. How do you get these into people's homes? Well, now you have computers in their homes and iPads, and I use my, I have a 14-year-old son, and he, I use him as a, like, wow, look what this kid's doing. You know, that's relevant to me. He loves to read comic books on his iPad, and I'll never see him buy a print copy. I know I won't. He would just be like, $3.99, $4.99 for a comic. No, you know, he's thumbing through webcomics left and right. So I think that's a big positive sign that, you know, it's not so good for comic book stores. They better figure it out. They better figure out how they can create, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And related, there's also an article over on Comic Book Resources talking that manga readers prefer print over digital. And this is actually talking about some of the stuff, you know, but they like the feel of the comic book in their hands. Now, this was in response to the question they asked was, how do you read manga, digitally or as a physical copy? Which do you prefer and why? So they're actually giving responses which are more of the personal feeling rather than trying to say, this is why we're doing it, this is why we're not doing it. But it is more of getting back to the reader and what the reader wants. Now, they do say that...
I was kind of surprised it wasn't the other way around. With such, you know, fine tradition of bootlegging, scanlations and whatnot of the Japanese manga and other foreign language manga.
Well, I figure since BE copy doesn't come with a giant robot, they don't want it. Now, they do say that it's hard to tell from the comments whether the readers are reading the manga on a computer or on smartphones.
Oh, yeah. The headline was backwards. Forget it.
Yeah, yep. But it does make a great contrast to the previous story over in the Huffington Post. And granted, again, this is a niche market where it's the manga rather than the entire comic industry. But it does show that there still is that segment out there that wants to receive the hard copy. Now,
wait a minute, Tom. I do have to do a correction. You do know manga is way bigger than comic book industry worldwide.
Yeah. Manga is still comic books. Granted, it is the Japanese comic books, and it is a different style. All right. But I look at the entire thing. There's more than just manga. I mean, if you go manga versus American comic books, absolutely, it's overwhelmed. But there's also back to that stigma of comic books. It's not like it's the Bam Biff Pow of the Adam West Batman. It's heavy stories, I mean, which we're now finally seeing, that have been seeing since the 80s, of getting into real stories using the graphic medium. But, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it is going to be much larger.
Here's something I don't want to stretch this out too long, but here's something a little philosophical, is that look what Japan has done with their manga shops. I think comic book shops in America have not done anything like what they do over there. I mean, I've got friends over in Japan, and they say that, you know, that's like the cool place to go, man. You can go there. They've made
manga cafes.
Yeah, you can listen to music. You can have your coffee, hang out with your friends, trade. And they've made it really like a destination, like a hangout. And I can't think of any comic book stores that I've been into that feel that way.
The closest thing I've seen is the Barnes & Noble, where they have the chairs for you to sit. They've got an area for you to talk with other people. They've got the coffee barista behind the bar, to where it's more a social thing, which is what books are supposed to be, the old coffee clatch.
Yeah.
As opposed to the hole-in-the-wall, stuffed to the brim with comic books, and the guy who looks like he hasn't shaved in 20 years. Again, my apologies to comic shop owners. I love y'all, but
few and far between cool shops. Like, there's Isotope Lounge in San Francisco, which is run by James Simon. He does a lot of cool, different things, but he runs his comic store sort of like a cocktail bar, kind of, you know? Like,
yeah,
that sounds awesome.
We've got a comic book shop over here in Garland, Texas. That's, I mean, not just comic books, and not just the merchandise, but the collectible cards and all that. And most of it is taken up with tables for you to sit and talk or play card games or whatever. But, I mean, that's one of the things that comic book shops should look at, is becoming more of a social media and becoming more than just the comic book geek destination. But to wrap up our day, I'm going to jump ahead in our storylines. We've got lots of stories which didn't make the news, and you can see that over on our website. But I want to jump ahead that after 90 years, after since the 70s, when the X-Men were released over at Marvel Comics, where they have been fighting for equality with humanity, to be taken as human, the final say has finally come in that mutants are not human, from Marvel Comics' lawyers. What had happened is there are various countries that have different types of taxes, and they have a different type of tax for dolls versus toys. Dolls being a human representation and toys being non-human. So they tax more on dolls than they do for toys. So the lawyers have saying that mutant figures are not actually human and therefore should not be taxed as much.
So we can put that argument to bed, everybody.
Another blow for mutant kind equality.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Charles Xavier. Charles Xavier is spinning in his grave. Or is Charles Xavier dead right now? I never know.
Anyway, it's hard to tell.
It's at least it's not.
Running down.
Yeah. But that's it for this time. I want to thank everybody for coming in, starting off with our special guest, DJ Kaufman from Hero by Night, which you can see over at Keenspot, keenspot.com, and his personal webpage at djkaufman.com.
Thank you for having me.
From BladeBunny.com and so many more, Drawmos, Eric Kimball.
Thank you much.
From AlexsGuide.net, Alex Heberling.
Ha-ha.
And I'm Thomas Revor, your main host. You can see my stuff and our others' comics over at 910 Comics at 910cmx.com. Glad to have you all here, and we'll see you in the funny papers.